Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Timms and me, Phil Nickel. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laughs.
Yes! It's Songs in the Key of Laughs, episode 2 of the second series, which is pretty cool, actually.
It's very cool, Phil.
Well, I'm happy that we're still doing it, David, and we hope that you listeners are. Last week, we had the amazing Adam Buxton.
I do love that man.
What a great interview. I know. He could tell.
Sorry about that. He definitely could, yes.
On today's episode, we got the world. Well, the world's messed up, David, but
it is.
Our show today is going to take in traveling, take in music from other countries, take in gibberish, maybe how music itself is a language. The language that soothes the wild beast.
Ah, that's so nice.
What else on the show?
Well, we've got the comedy song competition.
Contest. You nearly blew it.
I almost
did. We have a dazzling new track. This very, very funny track that you can listen to coming up.
We're also writing a musical, aren't we, Phil?
Yeah, we did. We started writing a musical last week and, oh, it was a doozy.
Doozy. There's that word again,
Phil. I just like the word doozy.
I know you like the word doozy.
Doozy is a doozy of a word. And our amazing, fantastic, superbus guest this week.
She was so superbus.
She was superbus. She was the superbus. It's wonderful.
Izzy Sooty.
The chords were quite jaunty, but he just spoke, I think. It wasn't sung. The chorus was, I don't like you, Jerry. I don't like you at all. There's something about, I just want to play with my ball.
Now, so we are Songs in the Key of Laugh, and the point of the Songs in the Key of Laugh is to kind of try to discover how music and laughter are good things. Right?
They are good things.
Yeah,
yeah,
they are good things.
They are good things.
I mean, and together, combine them, they're amazing things. Why are you laughing?
It's just such a strong link into the beginning of this section of the show, Phil. Well, Songs in the Key of Laugh is good.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Songs in the Key of Laugh. To laugh and to sing. What a great thing. But the thing is, I often think of songs, funny songs being, because comedy is so inherent in the English language, that, you know, the words are very important. But there is more to comedy than just the words.
Of course there's more to comedy than just the words.
Mr. Bean, for instance.
Oh, my goodness.
He doesn't have to say very much.
He doesn't have to. But do you know something about Mr. Bean?
No.
Right. So you know the title music.
Yeah.
How does it go?
I don't
know. Okay, so Phil, this is a test of your Latin.
Okay.
Right. Ecce homo. What does that mean?
Ecce homo?
Yeah.
Ecce meaning draw man?
Behold.
Behold man.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then qui est faber?
Qui est... He is... Faber. Bean?
Yeah.
He is a bean.
He is a bean. Behold the man. He is a bean. That is what that music is. That's what they're saying.
Oh, right. Did Mr. Bean write that?
I don't know if he wrote that, but I mean, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? It starts off with this beautiful, beautiful choral sound, and all they're saying is, behold the man, he is a bean.
Well, that was all Greek to me. I mean, languages are strange, Lauren, because they can sound, if you don't know the language, they can sound quite amusing. You know, like if you like they have a musical, like Italian has a musical lilt to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, and Japanese has a musical lilt to it. So these can, or have you heard that track? What's the guy's name? Adriana Celentra? Celentano? And he created in the 1970s, he created a track in Italian. That was using gibberish. It was like a fake American English because he wanted to prove that Italians would buy anything that was American. And that song became a huge hit. Have you heard that? I think it's called, like, it's got like some long, the prison essen quincy quasi lossel. I'm not making that up.
Let's have a listen. We're the same as you now. Home in the scene in a horror, maybe get the color boss died. Wait a minute. So everything that he's saying is complete and utter gibberish.
Yeah, he's written a form of American English to try and sell songs. Like, his idea was Italians will buy anything that's American, and he was proven correct because he wrote a song in American gibberish that was a huge hit.
Oh my goodness!
And I kind of like the idea of writing gibberish songs, and I've written a few. In gibberish, like I was in Amsterdam at Gay Pride, and we're sitting in this nightclub drinking beers and whatever, and I heard a song that I've since written a gibberish version of, and it sounded like what can only be described as Norwegian trip hop.
Okay.
I actually did this song at Latter in Oslo, and they went, "That's not Norwegian." I went, "That's the point. That's the whole point." Ridiculous. I mean, I like writing a foreign language. Like, I find foreign language songs so interesting, though. And there's, like, in The Sound of Music, there's, you know, farewell, adieu, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, yeah.
Or when you grow up, when you're studying French at school, you learn Frère Jacques. Like, there's, mm-hmm. you know, there these things are sort of, we do know them. I wonder if, I was in India doing a show at the Comedy Store in India, and Dave Johns was doing a routine about James Bond being Indian, and he was actually doing, David was doing the accent going, you know, my name is Bond, James Bond, right? And the audience was killing themselves. Like, it didn't come across as being racist in any way. That wasn't the idea of it. But I said to one of the Indian comedians backstage, does that sound weird to you? Like, he goes, well, he said it would be the same as me going on stage in England and going, hello, how are you? My name is... And just doing some really weird gibberish version of English. Because it doesn't sound... What David's doing doesn't sound like an Indian accent to us. That's why we're all laughing so hard. I mean, David, as a musician, you've traveled far and wide, worldwide. I mean, my God, you run a charity in South Africa, a musical charity in South Africa.
I do, yes. I run a charity called Sing in Changa, and we put music and arts education into township schools. Oh, we've taught 13,000 children up to now.
That's amazing. What's it called?
It's called Sing in Changa.
Well, I think everyone should donate some money to your charity, Sing in Changa.
I think they should too.
Yeah. Do you sing in
In Zulu.
In Zulu.
Yeah, there's 11 national languages in South Africa. Okay. But yes, Zulu is the one that I've attempted.
You actually sing in Zulu. That's amazing.
I try to. Okay. I try to. I've got a very good friend of mine who I've worked with for many, many years in South Africa and now in the UK. And his name's Tarbo. Mm. And during...
Tarby.
Tarbo.
Like Jimmy Tarbuck.
No, definitely not. No. Tarbo. We did lots of videos during the lockdown. I'll play one of them here. We sing in English and in Zulu.
What a beautiful day to go for lunch.
But David, wait. Wasn't it a bit early?
True. So we'll call it brunch. A lovely day. Walk in the park. But Tarbo, what will you do when it gets dark? What about tonight? How are you gonna keep a good cheer?
I'm gonna go to the pub and have some beer.
Oh, just one beer.
No, two beer.
Or three or four. But if you're really thirsty.
Really thirsty.
Just because of the sun.
Yeah, sun of course.
Very warm. Yeah, just for that reason.
Yep.
Then you can have some more.
Nangiwe mfwetu, zopuzu bia.
Nangiwe mfwetu, zopuzu bia.
Now, just while we're on the subject of Zulu, I had a really good conversation with Tarbo and we decided to do one of our videos based on The Lion King.
Oh, yeah. Is that in Zulu?
Well, some of it's written in Zulu, some of it's in Swahili.
Oh, right. Tim Rice wrote that.
Tim Rice. Elton John.
And Elton John.
Yes.
Although I doubt Elton John speaks Swahili.
I very much doubt it.
Yeah, he might.
He might.
I mean, he probably talks dirty to David Furnish. Ooh, in Swahili.
In Swahili. Why not in English?
Because it's sexier.
Okay. Well,
sorry, The Lion King.
All right, back to The Lion King. At the beginning, after this bit, the wonderful, amazing choir underneath sing Imbunyama, Imbunyama Bala, Imbunyama, Imbunyama Bala. And that actually translates as the king, the spotted leopard.
The king, the spotted leopard.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Instead of it being, this is Tarbo. So Tarbo, who will listen to this, Tarbo, I'm hoping this is correct. But you've told me that it means the king, the spotted leopard.
Well, that's exactly what David Furnish would say to Elton John. I could talk about this stuff all day because I'm a little bit obsessed with odd foreign language music, like weird stuff. Like the, what's that Japanese band? The Mahir Shalal Hashbez. And they're like, you have not listened to it. So, like, there is some English songs in it, but some mainly in Japanese. But this guy, what's his name? It's Tori Kudo. He was this Japanese composer who believed that the mistake, you know how Japanese artists could draw circles to make perfect circles. They spent their whole lives trying to draw a perfect circle freehand. He just had this idea that imperfections is what made human beings perfect. And so, for instance, he would get like a full orchestra to be the backing band, but he wouldn't let them tune to each other. They'd have to tune to themselves.
No.
So they were all good musicians. So they'd get it relatively close. So then, and then they'd bring in the room and they'd record. And it's cacophonic.
It's cacophonic,
but it also works. I just like those kind of weird. It makes me laugh, so I guess it is in a sense.
That would make me cry.
One of my favorite all time. I think maybe my favorite comedy song is in Dutch.
Right.
It's called One Day Fly. One day fly. And it was written by the Kopspikers, which is this television show of all these comedians. And they did it with George Baker, the guy that was made the song Little Green Bag famous.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had this song,
that movie.
And the song is about being a one-hit wonder. And it's a comedy song. And it was a one-hit. It went to number one. And I was there in the Netherlands the year that it came out. And you couldn't get away from it. One day fly.
Door dat uurtje langer, wordt er overal te vroeg.
Te laat!
One day fly, wanna be one day fly. I wonder why, I'm just a
we're going to be singing that all day.
How catchy is that?
One day fly.
I wonder why I'm just a...
One day fly.
I could not stop singing it. And my Dutch friends go nuts because every time I see one of them, I put it on and go, I hate that! Because it was just played everywhere that summer.
It's time for the comedy song contest. Competition.
It's a competition.
I did not do that.
You did.
It's a competition. Okay.
It's a contest.
It's a competition.
You're not competing against anyone. But we have a...
There is a prize.
Keep your entries and submissions coming in. This is heating up to be going to be quite a contest.
It is, absolutely. Quite a competition. who have we got this week, Phil?
We've got Danny Malone.
Danny Malone.
He's singing The Ballad of Derek and Dorothy.
Derek loves Dorothy. Dorothy loves Derek. Derek and Dorothy, they're in love. Dorothy thinks Derek is boring. Derek thinks Dorothy's uncaring. Derek and Dorothy, they're in love. He works long hours as an accountant. She always jokes he's a man you can count on. Derek stopped laughing at that joke a long time ago. Her friend said, don't you worry when he's working late, be looking at figures out on a date. She says, what? My Derek? Who else would have him? But recently her suspicions have grown. He's changed, become happy around the home. He's got a spring in his step and she knows she didn't put it there. Her mind starts to wonder, she tries to remember the last time they had sex. She thinks it's November 1994. She thinks back to that night, how he got all depressed, cause she'd laughed at him while he got undressed. It was a long time ago and the last time that they made love. Well, this was not how she saw marriage going. He's out sowing oats, she's at home sewing. She's not having that, she gets the keys, gets in the car. It's a Monday night, he's at the office working. But where's my iPhone? Reveals that he's lying. His actual location is shown as a nightclub in town. So she gets in that club and downs her tequila, then scans round the room for the man who's deceived her, the scarlet lady whose eyes she plans to gouge out. The bar is havoc, completely heaving. She thinks, who gets this drunk on a Monday evening? And it strikes her, oh yeah, it's you tonight. Then the DJ announces over the tannoy, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time you've been waiting for. You wanted him back, well here he is for you to enjoy. So welcome on stage, officially the second best male burlesque dancer in the Northwest. Please go wild for Derek the Gladiator. Derek hit stage as a Roman soldier. Think Russell Crowe, just a whole lot older. The girls go wild when he thrusts at them with his sword. It's the sparkle in his eye that strikes Dorothy. She remembers falling in love when they were 23. She recognises the Derek on stage, that's the Derek I married. The secret to increase what he makes in tips, made an ill-advised attempt at the splits. When his eyes meet hers and he's frozen with fear and with cramp. But as quick as a flash and in time with a song, she seductively places £5 in his thong, smacks him on the ass and whispers this in his ear. Well, I'm sorry if I made you feel undesired. You should have talked to me about it and crossed cross the line, but I'll forgive you if you can forgive me. And I'm pleased that you're dancing, but that makes you feel alive. Do me a favour, bring the costume on tonight. In the morning you can say I'm Derek and I'm glad I ate her. This time next year you'll be the best male burlesque dancer in the Northwest. And right down the front I'll be there, your number one fan. Cause Derek loves Dorothy, Dorothy loves Derek, Derek and Dorothy, they're in love, they're in love.
In this series, we've decided to drop the quickfire parody game because it wasn't really working. Stand by Bees. And I just like saying it. And actually, maybe that is probably the best one we've done.
I sang it to my daughter this morning and she genuinely smiled at me, but I think it was pity.
Yeah. Well, your daughter is only 3 weeks old, so she doesn't have a lot to compare it to. We decided to write a musical. We're going to improvise a musical. If you listen to the series last episode, episode one, we improvised the song. I think the songs will probably be in order. We'll try and
make the story absolutely work.
The first story improvised ended up with David and I in a boat heading towards a monsoon.
It was very scary.
What I did is I opened a dictionary, put my finger down.
Yep.
And then we sing about whatever word it comes up. David improvises a progression,
a thing, and we go from there.
So I've got my dictionary. You can hear that.
You do.
There, and you've got your piano.
I'm
going to open the dictionary. I'm going to put my finger down, and the word is juggle. Juggle?
Okay. Juggle.
Juggler. We'll go with juggler.
Juggler?
We'll go with juggler.
Juggler.
Okay. Straight to the juggler.
Straight to the juggler. Okay.
So, but we've got Phil and David are in their boat trying to escape a monsoon, so maybe we should end the scene with the big monsoon lights and sound spectacular.
Okay.
And then go into scene two.
Okay, so we're starting with a big monsoon.
Yeah.
Okay, so
something big.
Meanwhile, on the mainland. As I look out to sea, wondering where he may be, David, my love, where are you?
Who are you looking for, dear?
I don't know, Papa. It's David, David, my heart.
I never liked that boy. He looked like a horse. And he did nothing but juggle. There's no way that I'll let you marry David. Why not marry Phil?
'Cause I don't like Phil. He burps and snores. He's horrible.
But David doesn't do anything but juggle. He's a juggler. He's a juggler.
Oh, Papa, I want to marry a juggler. How many babies can he keep in the air?
It's not fair, I know, but someday you'll grow to understand that you should marry Phil. 'Cause he's got a job working for financial services.
Financial services.
David, where are you? David, I can't see, man.
Philip!
What happened?
Philip!
What happened? What happened? David, what happened, David? I think, Oh my, I think we've been shipwrecked.
What? Is this a desert island?
Can I just point out that's me playing piano at the end, not David?
I mean, wow. So, there we go. They're on a desert island.
Desert island dicks.
If you like contests and you write songs, you're going to love our contest because it's a songwriting contest. It's a contest where you can put your song in the contest. It's the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Contest. It's not a competition. It's a contest. Contest, contest, contest. Send your songs into songsinthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com.
It's time for our interview section.
Oh, yes. And it's a really great one.
Is it a doozy?
It is a doozy. It is Izzy Suti.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The guest on today's show is someone you might know. And if you don't, that's your own fault, but you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is...
Insert name here.
It's Izzy Suti!
Yay!
Oh, now, Izzy Suti, if you don't know, yeah, you should know, is a star of screen, musical comedy star, actor, a writer, a radio presenter, a radio comedy writer. You've done just about everything you can do in the industry. Are you a tap dancer? What else can you do?
Actually, I can tap dance.
Yeah, no way.
Well, that's how this episode's going to end, everybody, so stick around for that. We'll get Ellis on guitar and let's get right down to brass tacks. Infinite Drift.
Tell oh my us god. About... Infinite Drift. me, Dave Lowe, James Taylor, not the James Taylor. He wasn't at Highfield School in Matlock in the 90s.
James Taylor say that every time when he was asked?
I think he had to.
He had to.
Because these guys were fantastic musicians, but yeah, I think he had to be like, okay, yeah, I know I'm not the James Taylor, but...
We went to do a prison show at Stockton Prison in Edinburgh, and the guy that was leading us through was Davey Manson. No relation. So anyway, that's...
Might as well change his name to Deepole. By Deepole to that.
Anyway, so Infinite Drift. Tell us about it.
Infinite Drift was formed in 1992 at Highfields Comprehensive School in Matlock. It consisted of me, Dave Lowe, James Taylor...
Not the real James Taylor.
It has to be the same, doesn't it, as the Manson thing. James Taylor, not the James Taylor. And it had a lot of synth... a lot of organ. All our songs were long. Like, I think one of them was like 14 minutes long. We did a lot of Pink Floyd covers, and we did original songs as well. We did a song of mine called The Clock, which I could send you after this if you like, and you can play a bit of it.
Ooh, I love that.
Very high. It's about a clock. I remember the first line is, "You travel at a speed that no one can imitate." date. Wow. You tell people if they're early or if they're late.
What?
Wow. Your little hands so definite in their stride. Your little face so lonely and full of pride. You know when you're like a teenager and you write, it's like you see angst in every object.
Yes,
it was like that.
Also, because the hands of a clock go so slowly when you're a student. You're just like, that's as much as you're sitting there writing that. Yeah, man, this sums up. What am I doing with my life?
Yes, yeah, so
how old were you? 14.
Yeah, about 14. And then we didn't do many gigs. We did one gig at school. So I was at school with the lead singer from Gomez. Do you guys know that band?
Gomez. Yeah.
So the guy, Ben, who has the really gravelly voice. There are two singers, actually, but Ben has the kind of Tom Waitsy voice.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, so he was 2 years above me at school and we did a gig with him. He sang Sitting on the Dock of the Bay a cappella, just sitting on the edge of the stage, and everyone was like, oh my God, his voice is amazing. And then we had to follow him and we were like playing. We were like, okay, we don't want to follow him. He should be closing. Even at that age, I had an idea of like who should close the gig and who should be the support. Yeah, exactly.
Was there any sense of irony that you were singing a song about a clock as you were going on and on and on? Everyone's going, get Ben back on.
Please let it end. It's been 45 minutes. We know about clocks. Do you know what? James Taylor and Dave Lowe, they're still doing music, both of them, and they were really, really great musicians. Great. And it was really good because I'd always just played guitar. And my mum was a pianist from when I was a very young age and a church organist. So I'd sort of had the church organ in my life. But when I met Dave and James, that was the first time I'd experienced organ as a kind of cool instrument, if you know what I mean, rather than something I associated with church. So, yeah.
So you started playing the guitar when you were...
Yeah, so I started playing the guitar when I was about 11 or 12. I had played the piano and the violin previous to that, but the guitar was the first instrument that I really loved. And I did want to play the sax. I really wanted to play the sax. And Mum said, you'll need to play the clarinet first. Which I don't actually, now I found out, I don't know if that's true.
That's not true.
Right. Well,
there we go. It does help. It does help, but it's definitely not integral.
Well, I think that was her reason for not, I think she just thought, I'm not having the sound of a saxophone in the house. And she was like, no, you have to learn to play the clarinet first. You don't want to do that. So why don't you play the guitar?
Imagine the number of Scottish families going, you're not playing the bagpipes.
Yeah. Oh my God. In lockdown, I was like, because, you know, Phil and I have talked about this before, but my dad was Scottish and Phil's met my great auntie Margaret, she passed away during lockdown.
Oh,
she was like
so
98, you know, she nearly, and she hated the Queen, so she would have hated to have got a telegram
letter
from the Queen. Yeah. But she was so brilliant. And as you know, Phil, she just loved you so much.
Your family were always very supportive of me.
Yeah.
And I think it's the Scottish connection. Maybe it's the Scottish connection.
No, I like that there's that, but it's because you're brilliant. They wouldn't have come if you were like standing on stage going, hi, I'm Phil.
Oh my God, that's my new show.
Actually, do you know what? Damn. You would make that funny. Hi. I could actually imagine you going, hi, I'm Phil. In lockdown, I was like, okay, this is a chance for me to reevaluate my life. And having two young kids, it was pretty manic in the house and stuff. But also I was like, those few moments of headspace that I got, I was like, what am I doing? Do I want to learn a new instrument? Because I've always wanted to get a 12-string guitar, and I will do that. And I think it would change my songwriting. I just had this moment of like, I should learn the bagpipes. And I think it might have been to do with Auntie Margaret passing away and kind of go, you know, like reconnecting to that Scottish half of me. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I tweeted it. And then so Auntie Margaret's husband, my Uncle George, was the lone piper at the Tattoo.
Oh, really?
George Stoddart. Yeah. And he was involved in this piping shop on the Royal Mile, which is quite famous within Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And then they tweeted me and they were like, we'll give you piping lessons. And I told them about George. And I still haven't followed it up. So actually, this has reminded me. I think I would like to learn the bagpipes. So
should learn the bagpipes.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to play them? Either of you?
My brother Andrew had a small. Do you play them, David?
No, I don't play them. I have an issue with... This is a really unpopular thing that I'm going to say. I don't like
talking
them.
To two Scottish people.
I know. Yeah. I can't hack them. I don't know what it is.
Really? They're delightful.
I used to do this bit in shows where I would go, okay, this side of the audience, can you do this? And this side of the audience, can you do this? And then, so they both do those, do two notes at the same time, and on top of it, you go, and it sounds exactly like bagpipes. So, yeah, I'm really sorry if I've just disrespected.
Both of us are shaking our heads.
I'm leaving this podcast.
Just leave. Might change your name to David McTims just to
David McTims. Yeah. No, I have tried to play them before. They're quite difficult to play just because I don't know if you've ever played the accordion. But yes, right. So moving the accordion to make the air pass out of the instrument is quite reasonably similar. That you've got to keep like a constant compression going. It's weird.
Yes,
so
is it a bit like patting your head and rubbing your tummy at the same time?
Because
you have to
like
use your mouth and your arm. Yeah, no, I can see that. You start on a thing called a chanter, don't you? Is that right? Yeah. That it's a kind of quieter version.
My brother Andrew played the chanter, because the chanter is the bit at the bottom you make the notes with.
Yeah.
The bit you blow into is actually just filling the bag up. The chanter is the bit. The chanter is the bit you play. Yeah.
Yeah.
My brother was quite good at it, actually.
Yeah.
But my dad would never let him actually get actual bagpipes. But if you play the chanter,
your dad.
I'm shaking my head again.
I'm seeing the breakup of this brilliant podcast. It's gonna. This is the moment that the relationship's come to an end.
Can't believe it. The thing about the bagpipes is you can. It's also the split reed instrument, which is a split reed, which comes from the Galatian people. It's a Celtic instrument. It comes from the north of France, and it was used by goat herders to bring it. It made the noise that the goats would hear, and it would bring goats in because there's something in the noise. And so it was adapted. So people think the bagpipes are a Scottish instrument, and I guess technically they are because they were created to make the noise louder. As a war sound, but they were actually used as a goat herding instrument. You can hear that split reed all over the north of France. People still goat herders still play them. So
David's mouth has gone into a line, like a child's drawing of a sad face. His mouth just sort of went.
And the other thing I like about this is the Uilleann pipes, which is the Irish version of it, which you don't blow into. You actually pump with your arm. It's got a softer sound. It's more gentle sound.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I saw a band in Glastonbury once called The Widowmaker, and it was a woman playing the Uilleann pipes, and she had this beautiful singing voice, and a guy playing drum and bass, DJing drum and bass, which I don't normally like.
Yeah.
But the two of them together, the bass player, her playing the Uilleann pipes, and a DJ. And it was magical.
That's all you need to make drum and bass palatable. They should use it in clubs.
David just went, I could see David's face. What could make drum and bass worse? Bagpipes.
I was going to say, we listen to very different things when we go to festivals. Luckily, there's more than one tent. Okay, so you'd like to learn how to play the bagpipes. I'm really sorry for offending anybody that likes that instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to the guitar, then.
Back to the Spanish piano.
Yes, back to the guitar. So you started learning it. Sorry, was it 11? You said,
yeah, about 11. So yeah, Mum said you can't. She said don't do the sax. You'll have to learn the clarinet first. And then I don't quite remember. I think the guitar might have even been in a charity shop, or we'd acquired it somehow, maybe from a friend. So it was a big. My first guitar was like a very big, just unbranded guitar. And then I got a Yamaha quite soon after that was electroacoustic, that was again very big. And I had drum lessons and guitar lessons with a guy, a brilliant musician called Dan Marriott, who lived up the road. And so I used to just go for like 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday morning, and I'd have the lesson. Then he had a brother who was the year above me, and I knew a lot of their friends as well, and we all just used to jam for like hours. And it was like the best thing, because I got the kind of, I suppose, the theoretical side of it first, and then I used to sing in when we were jamming as well. I used to sing too, and I actually ended up going out with the younger brother Thomas a few years later, and we spent this summer just living in their house, and we ate one meal a day, which was like a fry up. We ate it at like 3 p.m. and it was like piled like a mountain, all this food. I don't think it's very good for you to eat one massive meal a day, but we were like 16. And we just used to play all day, and we'd rotate. They had a studio in their house, and there were just loads of guitars, a really good drum kit, loads of mics. And we just used to jam from like, it was absolutely brilliant. But for me, having that space just to mess about was fantastic. No, you know, we were just all really encouraging of each other and we used to rotate around the instruments and it was fantastic.
I think that's really important. I recently went to one of those, I got invited a studio I'd been working in. They said, oh, by the way, we have a jam here every Wednesday night. And I wasn't really sure. I run lots of jams around London. I was like, okay, so it's probably going to be a bit like this. And I turned up and I'd say that the level of musicianship maybe wasn't what I was really expecting. But what you did have was just this completely free feeling in the room.
Yeah.
And everybody was just kind of swaying through the music. And it was amazing to just have to think of the sound rather than what was coming out of your fingers. And it was so cool.
Yeah, that sounds brilliant. Like that, it's a bit like improv, really, isn't it? And when you get that trust, it's really exciting. And it, you know, you can afford to mess about and try something. It doesn't matter if it sounds shit. It, you know, no one's going to just move on to the next bit and try something else. I think it's really important, actually. And when I used to go to the Jazz Cafe on a Sunday morning as well, I loved it. I never dared to get up, but I saw some amazing musicians. I don't really play jazz, but I really like jazz. And it was brilliant.
What's the name of the? I was just thinking about improv and jazz. What's the name of the jazz? Is it Jarrett? Something Jarrett?
Keith Jarrett.
Keith Jarrett. And I remember hearing Keith Jarrett. And if you've not heard it, he just basically would get up. We never play the same thing twice. And he would get. Yeah. And he's known for it. He would get up. So I'm right about this.
Yeah, he'd never play the same chord.
Never play the same thing. And he would just let whatever was happening in his in the moment go. And there's some amazing stuff online. And I read something about him. I think it's a quote by him, but paraphrasing it, he's basically saying that only by improvising like that do you find true moments of musicality. And I think what he meant was when you do hit those amazing moments where the whole band come together because they're all listening and it's, you know, it's improvised, it's like that's when you're actually in tune and harmony. Whereas if you practice and you know where you're going to go and you hit those things, well, you've kind of practiced them and it's
not the same buzz. It's like being on stage, you know, when you like have that feeling when you improvise on stage verbally, I mean, not musically, and something happens in the room and you roll with it and the audience really feels like they're part of something spontaneous. It must be the same feeling. And they don't come that often, do they? Those moments where it's like everyone's on exactly the same page at the right time, but it's so brilliant.
We had a moment recently. I asked our producer, James Hingley, wonderful man.
The handsome James Hingley. Not very handsome. Not the real James Hingley.
So James came along to one of the jams that I did, and James is a really, really quite fine guitarist. He's just written in the chat, this is getting cut. he's a fantastic guitarist, and at one point everything had kind of petered out and nobody really knew what they were doing. And I was like, I looked at James and he just ripped into this wonderful little lick and everything all just fell into place.
Aww.
And it's exactly like that moment. You're like, yeah, there's the adrenaline I wanted. There's that.
Yeah, and then he brought out the bagpipes. And it was just...
and David left.
Yeah, well. So what kind of style of music would you say that you played most then?
I don't know. Like folk, maybe? I never really thought about it. I just always wrote. I just wrote what came out, man. But I don't know.
I want to make the bridge, though, because I think it's important that we make this bridge, because it is songs in the key of laugh. What was the first comedy song that you wrote?
Well, I started off writing love songs. I think they were tongue-in-cheek, really. Like, so I would, like, if I fancied a guy or my friend fancied a guy, I'd write a love song for the guy, and they were, you know, they were a bit silly, but they were also supposed to make the guys fall in love with us, which didn't happen. And then around that time I also wrote a song, and I think this is probably the first comedy song, called I've Had an Eventful Day, and it was sung in a Cockney accent, and I was probably only about 12, I think, and I obviously didn't know at that point that I would end up using accents quite a lot in my songs. So I do, don't I? And I sort of put on men's voices and do, I am a woman, so either use my own voice or a higher voice for the women's part. But it was a bit of a revelation in Edinburgh when I discovered that I could essentially duet with myself. I remember going like, how the hell am I going to tell this story over an hour, which involves a relationship between a man and a woman who aren't me? And then my boyfriend at the time was like, you just do a different voice of the bloke. And I was like, oh my God, yeah. And then I thought, actually, I sort of have been doing that since I was a teenager, but I'd never done two different voices within a song. So the first song was, I've had an eventful day, and it was a Cockney accent. Well, it was from the point of view of a man who lay in bed all day and didn't do anything. And then when people said, what have you done? He just said, oh, I've had an eventful day. And it was quite deadpan. At that point, I wouldn't have done that kind of song at a gig. So the gigs that I was doing, which I was doing from quite a young age in various bands, including Infinite Drift. But my first band was Izzy Sutty and the Muppets, which was with the group that I talked. Yeah. the group that I talked about before, the two brothers and a few other guys, most of whom are still doing music for a living. We were like, I only did serious songs in the bands. The idea of doing something like I've had an eventful day was unthinkable, because at that point I thought I either wanted to be an actress or a serious musician. It didn't cross. Well, I didn't really watch stand up. I didn't really understand that was a job. So the songs that we did on stage in the bands were things like The Clock or things about like just really like angsty stuff, you know, serious stuff. And it wasn't until I went to college when I was 19 that I performed a comedy song on stage, although I'd kind of been writing them on and off.
So your stand-up career started with you doing comedy songs, or did you do stand-up and then started adding the music to it?
So what I did was, I went to Guildford School of Acting, which was very supportive of my songwriting, actually. I don't think all drama schools would have been like that, but I was in a Songs from the Shows thing in my third year where everyone did songs from musicals and I was allowed to do one of my own songs. Oh, wow. And I did a comedy song in that called A Million Faces about the perfect guy. It was pretty hack stuff looking back, like he doesn't like Star Wars and stuff like that. But, you know, it was the best I could do at the time. And I lived with a French guy in my third year called Laurent Lafitte, who is actually now quite a famous French actor. Mm. All I remember about him is that he hated this leopard skin coat that I had. But he was, it was never going to work. He was gay as well. There was that. But I mean, I could have turned him if he'd liked leopard skin.
Yeah, but you didn't want to have the last name Lafitte anyway, did you?
Like, Lafitte. Yeah, Lafitte. Izzy Lafitte. It was quite a good cabaret name.
Izzy Lafitte. Yeah. Get your foot in the door. Anyway.
But I remember, so the night before I did A Million Faces at college, he said, try it in a French accent. And it lifted it, it changed it. And there was something about doing, I can't really do a French accent brilliantly. So it was a slightly silly foreign accent. But somehow that released the comedy element of it. It was odd. And that went well. And that was the first time I'd got a laugh from a song that I'd written. And then I was allowed to do it in this Songs from the Shows thing. So I did it lots and lots. So when I graduated, I did the gay circuit for about a year. I entered a comedy competition in a gay bar in Tottenham Hale that I remember just being off a roundabout. It's called the Lee Paris Variety Bar. I don't know if it's still there. Right. With original songs. One was from the point of view of Jerry Halliwell's dog, who was Jewish and from New York and hated her but couldn't talk. So you kind of saw inside her his head, and the chorus was like, and the chords were quite jaunty, but he just spoke, I think. It wasn't sung. The chorus was, I don't like you, Jerry. I don't like you at all. And something about, I just want to play with my ball. So I did that. I had a song about Jordan, a lullaby. Lullaby for Jordan, now obviously known as Katie Price, just sort of saying, just chill out, don't go out so much, have an early night.
If only she'd listened to your song.
If only she'd been at the Lee Paris Variety Bar, everything could have been so different. So I won that competition, and I won £300 worth of gigs on the gay circuit. and it was lots of fun. There were some horrendous deaths. I'd sometimes get to venues and there was no mic stand. And one time we had to like gaffer tape the mic to my boobs, basically. And then I couldn't sing anyway because it was like having to look down the whole time. It was a lot of fun though. Like you never knew what you were going to get. I had some really, really lovely gigs and some truly awful ones. Like to absolute silence, I got booed off. You know, it was a real baptism of fire. And then I started doing open mic nights. But when I started doing open mic nights, the problem was I couldn't talk between the songs. I'd do a song, they'd clap, and then I'd just be like, and then I'd go on to the next song. So I thought I need to learn how to just be on stage and not do songs. So I didn't do songs for about the first year of doing like the open mic circuit that you find in Time Out and stuff, you know, like all those little gigs we used to do above pubs, which was kind of a bit different from the gay circuit that I've been doing, much smaller venues and stuff like that. And then I introduced the guitar after about a year and everyone was like, oh, that's what you should have been doing all along. Kind of like, you were never a brilliant kind of political stand-up. I don't know what you were trying to do.
Yeah, but it takes a long time to develop a stand-up comedy voice.
I think it does.
You know, we talk about this on the show a lot because Mike Wilmot, who's the Canadian, you know, grandfather of Canadian comedy. Well, he'd hate that, but he's a granddad. but he calls the guitar a cheat stick, and because purist comedians, A, they're jealous they can't do it. You're just jealous you can't play the guitar anymore. Give me your guitar. He started playing it. he could play guitar if he wanted to.
You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, exactly. They all can. Tom Stead does it. They all can play it. But but I don't think it's fair because I think this is part of the exploration of this podcast. You know, people like Billy Connolly and Steve Martin, and well, there's, you know, the names go on and on. Do you think there is a connection in the comedy musical brain? Do you think there's something in that, the way you approach your comedy? Do you write it as in, is there a musicality to it?
I don't know. What I will say is I haven't written a decent comedy song since I've had kids. And I think that's to do with not having the headspace. I think you use a different part of your brain to write any kind of song, including a comedy song, from what you'd use to write stand-up, straight stand-up. So I'm writing a new show now. I did half an hour last night. I'm really enjoying it with no songs. This is the first time since 2004 that I've been on stage without a guitar.
Right.
And I don't know why, it just feels right to see if I can do an hour without it. You've done that as well, Phil, haven't you? You've done both. Like you, and I think you've got to go with what you feel at the time. And I think probably I'll end up putting a song or two in it. But what I was thinking was that before I had kids, when I wrote a comedy song, I used to need, and I don't know if you find this as well, like I used to need a real space, like maybe 4 or 5 hours, even though I didn't use that whole time, most of the time. And it's almost like, I think with a song, it's more of a delicate process without getting to, like I think when I've written a comedy song and I think this is good, and there've been plenty of times I thought, I don't know if this is good or this is bad. But when you sort of feel it all coming together, it's almost writing itself. It's like you're the conduit. And I sometimes feel like that with songwriting. And since I've had kids, and I wouldn't change anything for the world, obviously, but I haven't had that mental space to be able to kind of give myself over to the songwriting. If that doesn't sound too wanky.
No, it doesn't, no.
Yeah, but in answer, and I think as they get older, that's when I'll come back into it and go, you know, like if when they're going to football all day or out with their mates, or I think I'll get that time back. And I'm just embracing this sort of this different bit of me. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to try and write an hour. I'm not going to, because I hate the cheat stick thing in a way. Well, I think you and I both know acts who we won't name, who I sort of go, yeah, that's a lazy song. Like that doesn't feel. That doesn't feel like they're destined to play an instrument and do comedy songs. It feels like they've kind of tacked it on, or they've. But most of the acts that I see doing songs, I think, you know, that's a great bit of comedy. I don't think really about whether it's a song or not. Tom Basden is someone who's really good at putting jokes as songs.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard his song about, it goes, I killed my friend by popping a champagne cork into his face. I think that's the first line. And it's so beautifully written. It's kind of like very somber and it's wonderful. But that could have been a joke. And he's kind of set the joke to music. Mm. And Tim Minchin as well is someone who I think uses music so beautifully and takes you on an emotional journey as well as a comedic one.
Yeah.
He gave us some tickets to his live show and I went and sat with my brother and we were just bawling our eyes out. So
best comedy gig ever.
Oh, he's brilliant. If someone said to you guys, write a song about anything, the deadline is Friday, it can be about anything, you'd be like, oh, okay, what am I going to write about? Whereas if someone said, it's got to be about an awards ceremony that goes wrong, you'd be
so
like,
much
great.
Yeah.
So I think in the same way, when you're writing a show, and that's why writing songs, I think, is hard when you just think, oh my God, I could write about anything. Once you get even small, even vague parameters, you can go, oh, okay, it's going to be about my family, therefore. So it's getting that balance.
So here's because, you know, I do a little, the odd bit of direction for people. And I come up against this problem with people all the time is that they then, if you say it's going to be about my family, and then every single thing is about their family, that's not as interesting as if it's about them and then it ends up being about their family.
Yeah.
So you could start talking about, similar to the Tom Bazin talking about the cork and killing his friend. He's probably gone off. That song probably goes off into other reaches of what that friendship was. It circles around the coming back to that idea. So you actually forget the show is about your family. So it takes you to a place. So when you're coming up with ideas and fleshing out ideas, I make a list of all the ideas that I've had and go, actually, that's got nothing to do with this topic, but I'm going to keep that one in here because I think I'm going to find the way of joining it without crowbarring it in.
Yeah.
I'm going to find the way of joining it, making that work, and then going, oh, but I mean, that's just stylistically what I do. I go, oh, anyway, we're talking about this. And then I go back to, I digress and digress and digress. And I just think
that's nice because I think that's like weaving. That's what I've never written a show which has, I've always written a show that has a narrative. So it's always coming back to a story of what happened next.
Yes.
So it's a kind of new thing for me to go. I'm literally going on stage and going, right, I'm going to talk about the Ouija board. Then I'm going to talk about this present that my mum wanted. She's all right. Then I'm going to, and it's like, it's kind of a weird thing for me. I'm like, oh, but what's the story? What? And it's like, there is no story. Just roll with it. I'm having to roll with it.
Yeah, but that is the story. You know, what you just said there, we followed all of that and there doesn't need to be the join is just that it's you.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I did 1 half hour at the end of every bit of material. I was like, speaking of Ouija boards. Like that kind of thing.
Speaking of Ouija boards.
Just like, you don't need to do that.
So you said that you haven't written a new song in a while.
But, yes.
Surely now, having two kids, you've got plenty and plenty of ammo.
I don't really talk. So we don't really talk about the kids that. I talk about my daughter a little bit in this new show, but generally, I don't know why we just don't talk about the kids that I sort of. We don't put any photos of them online. I sort of feel like it's like up to them whether. And sometimes I feel really bad for like basically like bloody hell my kids, you know, because they're cool. So I've got to kind of, I guess I've just got to realize that they're material, everything's material, stop being so sentimental. Do an hour about how annoying they are. You'd think so, but I think it's got to be, I always think about when I used to go and see comics before I had kids. It's got to be funny. I think it can't just be funny to people with kids.
Yeah.
So it's like if you did a show about, if you did a song about, I don't know, maybe like abseiling or something, and there were loads of jokes about, like, hey guys, isn't it awful when the, I don't know any of the technical terms. What are those things called? The metal things.
I was going to go with the rappelling joke.
Brackets.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Don't you hate it when you're rappelling?
That's it. We should write it together.
We'll call it Repellent.
This is a really good song repellent. Already. Let's write a song about abseiling, despite not knowing anything about abseiling.
What could you do at those gigs? I think it's quite a good litmus test. Like, and a song, a song about a specialised thing like abseiling, say, where there were lots of in-jokes and you'd get like three abseilers in the room pissing themselves laughing and the rest of the room is going like, what the fuck is a carabiner? And I sort of feel like the same about the kid thing. I don't think it can't be done, but I haven't thought of anything that I feel would appeal to the whole room. And I don't want to ostracise anyone who hasn't got kids because I don't want to be them to be sitting there bored for 3 minutes. I guess when it's a show, if you go, I've got an hour, it's all about kids, people are going to come to it because of that, so it's different. But I guess I'm thinking if you're doing 20 minutes or a charity gig or something, or, you know. Yeah,
I think that's why a lot of comedy songs, not all comedy songs, but a lot of comedy songs, if they're not, if you're not specialist to the audience, the performer, like the performer's audience, they do tend to work better if they're scatological, mildly violent, naughty, or topical. You know,
yeah, that's true. Or there's like a clear pullback and reveal, or like they need to understand quite soon, don't they, that this is what it is. It can't really be. You're right. There's such a big difference between going on a mixed bill where, you know, people don't know who you are, or some people might have seen you before, some people haven't, and going on and doing your own show. And obviously, I much prefer the latter, which I'm sure you guys do as well. Like, you know, going on where people have seen you before or they understand what it is you do, because then you can go deep and you can talk about. And Phil, I've seen you do like bits that are emotional and funny, and bits that, you know, when you've done your hour long shows, it's, you know, you can afford to do that in an hour, can't you? You can go deep and you can have those moments of like pathos, true pathos, and then you can puncture it with a joke and you can really play around with it. And that's what's really exciting about doing your own show, I think.
Well, I hope that your new show becomes all those things.
Thanks, me too.
And I hope that you don't stop writing songs as well.
I won't. Don't worry. I won't.
Okay, good.
I think you should end the show with bagpipes.
Oh my God!
Don't do
that.
Just saying.
Don't do that. People will leave.
No. Well, that's what you want them to do at the end of a show.
Yeah, exactly. You could do it if you, like, the venue's like, we cannot run over, like, the curfew. Stop playing the bagpipes.
Actually, the minute you pick them up, people will stand. And...
Not in Scotland, though. It'd be the opposite in Scotland.
Exactly. Yeah, so you can do it everywhere but Edinburgh.
If you don't win the Edinburgh Comedy Prize for that, I'll be angry. Now, at this point in the proceedings, we always ask our guests to play a little song for us and do a little performance for us. A little performance. That sounds so condescending. Can you do a little performance for us? But we were wondering if you would if you would mind singing.
Of course.
Singing,
I'm just going to find my capo. It would be really good if we ended with a recording of the bagpipes as if I played them, but I will actually do a song.
Actually, I might do that now.
Yeah, put it on. Put the bagpipes on while I'm finding the capo.
You do realise that's racist, David?
It's not racist.
We've just lost all of our Scottish listener.
That is not. It is not racist to mock a bagpipe.
Okay, then it was cultural appropriation. It was something. When this interview's over, we're having a chat.
Okay.
What is it that you'll be playing for us today?
I think when I did your gig, I did the jazz song, which I haven't done for years, because I was like, I've got a band here and I feel like doing it. But I finished on the Welsh song, which is probably the one I'm going to do now. So... My mum played me to sleep every single night when I was growing up with Beethoven or Bach normally. She was doing her grade 8 piano. She was a piano teacher, and I used to go to sleep. I used to say my prayers, and I used to say PP, PR, PC, PV, which stood for play the piano, play the recorder, play the cello, play the violin. They were the instruments we had in the house. And she always used to play the piano. So every single night I had my bedroom door open, she had the door open to the room with the piano in it, and she, I think it was a nice way to go to sleep. Yeah.
It's when she goes into the Ring trilogy, it might start to be a bit of a problem.
Oh my God. So we went to see the Ring trilogy for her 70th, Jesus Christ. And I had a really bad hangover. Like I did not start from a neutral position. I started with a deficit of everything. And oh my God, I didn't realise how long it was. And it wasn't even the whole thing, but it was still like 5 hours. And a woman on our row, suddenly there was this commotion on the row and everyone was like, oh, like call the staff. Everyone thought this woman had died. No one could wake her. And she was just in a really deep sleep. She did this massive snore and everyone realized she'd just fallen asleep. It's like so long. Yeah. Yeah. That could be a song. Don't go and see the Ring Cycle with a hangover.
There you go. And it's ready for you. You've got the guitar ready.
Okay. I'll do it after this. It's your fault if I don't go for a run. Every morning this week I said I'm going to go for a run. There's always a fucking reason why I don't go. Sorry, I had to write a song about the Ring Cycle. Okay. So Ellis is Welsh, my partner. We've been together for 10 years now. But Welsh is his first language and it's the Welsh culture is very important to him and the language. So I am learning Welsh. This is a song that I've written for him, really. And the only other language that I can speak is French. And the only thing I can remember in French is Je joue le ping-pong à La Rochelle, which is I play table tennis in La Rochelle, which in this country is like the stock phrase that everyone learns, Phil. I don't know about Canada, but it's just like that's all I came away from school knowing. So I'm hoping that my Welsh fares a little bit better. So here's the Welsh song. Translate it in case you don't know what it means. I went, you went, he, she went, we went, you went, formal, they went. Caris went to the town centre for lunch, she had cheese. It is hailing, raining, snowing, cold, hot, foggy. I have one sister, I like swimming. Oh, I play table tennis where I can't remember. Dwi'n chwarae tennis bwrdd yn La Rochelle.
Yes. That's Izzy Suti here on Songs in the Key of Laugh. Thank you so much, Izzy Suti.
Thanks, Izzy.
Oh my God, I've loved it. It's been like... We're having a coffee with old friends.
So much fun. Well, yeah. We are. I had a coffee.
We are.
I had a tea. I did have one, but Phil's used it to lean up his notes. So I didn't drink it.
So you didn't drink it. Oh, you have to put it in the microwave.
I know. thank you so much, Izzy. That was so wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. I've really enjoyed it. And thanks. It's made me think about my show. It's good to talk about it, when you're writing it, isn't it?
Yeah. You know you're going to have bagpipes. You know you're going to talk about your family.
Yeah.
You're going to write a song about not going to the opera.
Abseiling. Oh, yeah. Don't go to the Ring Cycle with a hangover.
The hangover. Yeah.
Write a song about your kids vomiting. You know, it's just the norm.
Yeah,
why
the
not?
Norm. It's like it could end up being an hour of songs after all this.
To Alice, tell Alice he did a great job tuning the guitar as well.
I will. He did actually, didn't he? I will.
Thanks, Izzy.
Thanks, Izzy.
Bye.
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 Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye. Goodbye!
What an amazing guest,
yes,
Izzy was.
She's such a sweetheart. And that song is phenomenal. And foreign language.
Absolutely.
Which ties the whole thing up. If you'd like to hear more or see more of Izzy Suti, why not follow her on Twitter at Izzy Suti?
And don't forget to read her book, Jane Is Trying.
And make sure that you donate some money to David's South African charity,
Sing in Changa. And you can do that at singinchanga.org.
And if you'd like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/songsthekeyoflaugh or ko-fi.com/songsthekeyoflaugh.
Thanks, guys. We will see you next week for more of the same.
On Songs the Key of Laugh with me, Phil Nichol.
And me, David Timms. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.